From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of November, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the Chinese economy is showing signs of slowing. It has spurred more caution in the economic trade. A U.S. judge has ruled the trustee handling MF Global funds can continue to disperse customer funds. And Deere & Company has posted a very, very strong fourth quarter profit. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then as we close out our half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. December wheat for the soft red at $5.79 and a quarter, down 14 and 3 quarters. March at $5.94 and a quarter, down 8 and 3 quarters. And May soft red at the CME Group at $6.12, down 9 and a quarter. July 10 cents lower at $6.25 and a quarter. And the hard red in Kansas City at $6.73 and a quarter. Down 11 and a quarter for the July contract. From the corn pit back in Chicago, December futures, 588 and three quarters, 10 and a quarter lower. The March at 595 and a half, down 10 and a quarter. The May, 602 and a half, 9 and three quarters lower. July corn at 605 and three quarters, down a dime. And next year's December at $5.42 and a quarter, down 6 and three quarters. January soybeans, 1122 and a half, 30 and a half lower. The March at 1131 and a half, down 31 and a quarter. May soybeans, 1140 and a quarter, down 31 and three quarters. July at 1148 and a quarter, down 32 and a half. And November beans at $11.38 and a half, down 30 and a half cents. Bean meal at $282.50, $9.50 lower. December bean oil at $49.32, $50.77, or down $1.46 for the afternoon. Mercantile exchange numbers finished the December live cattle at $121.40, a nickel lower. February at $122.75, down 55 cents. January feeders, $1.22.5 lower at $145.80, and the December lean hogs up 22 and a half at $88 and a nickel. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures, January contract, $96.32 a barrel, down $1.69. Ethanol at $2.49.7. That's a nickel and 9 tenths lower. Natural gas at $3.46.9, 5.5, or rather 5 4/10 cents higher. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.96 4/10, 6 9/10 cents lower. Gold futures at $1,695.70 an ounce, down $6.50. The Dow just about 194 points lower at 11,299. The dollar at 79.1 is up 0.8, and the CRB index at 306.73. That's down 4.2 on the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll see mostly sunny skies with a high near 51 degrees, west winds at about 3 to 7 miles an hour today. Tonight, mostly clearer, a low of 34, southwest winds at 3 to 7, and then tomorrow for Thanksgiving Day, sunny, a high near 59 degrees, south-southwest winds between 7 and 15. Gusting to 20 miles an hour. All in all, a beautiful afternoon tomorrow. Thursday night, mostly clear, a low of 43, south-southwest winds at around 13, gusting to 17. And Friday, the skies will stay sunny, 61 degrees, breezy, a south-southwest wind between 13 and 20 miles an hour, gusting to 28. Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 47, Saturday showers, cloudy, a high near 54. Chance of precipitation on Saturday set at 70%. Saturday night, rain likely, cloudy, a low of 36, and on Sunday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, and a high near 42 degrees. Sunday night, cloudy and 32, Monday, sunny and 42, Monday night, cloudy and 31, and on Tuesday, partly sunny, a high near 40 degrees. More complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, is on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. We're looking forward to having a good Thanksgiving. I hope you are as well.
You bet. And even with these low prices, we'll try to keep our head high.
Thank you so much. So let's start with the low prices. What happened today?
Well, you know, one part of my body, I see wealth destruction, and then we also see risk aversion. In the middle of the night, of course, we understand that the German, basically the strongest country in Europe had trouble selling their bonds and overnight trading. And then the other thing is the Chinese purchasing managers index fell. And, of course, that means a slowdown in the Chinese economy. And, of course, the major problems, if Germany, a very strong industrialized European country, can't basically make things happen, the other EU countries are, in cardiac arrest. And it did have a tremendous impact in our commodities and the stock market and all commodities. The other factor is, of course, we have seen a major sell-off, and then on the back side of this, we do have...
Paul? Oop. Well, it seems like we lost Paul. We'll see what we can do here in a bit, and we'll try to get him back in just a moment, okay? Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu. Well, if all things are working properly, Paul should be back with us. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd. You hung up on me.
No, not really.
Okay.
The system just left us for the moment. That's okay.
But anyway, the MF Global situation isn't helping matters, with the commodity markets in the third place. But the marketplace is taking risk off the table. People are taking money out of the futures market, and that didn't help the trade today.
Okay, so we have Germany who couldn't sell bonds overnight. The European Union's looking at thinking that maybe they can pool their assets and sell bonds to 17 nations as opposed to individuals. I don't know whether that'll work or not. You have the Chinese economy slowing down, but that's an interesting sort of the conundrum, because slowing down means they go from, 10 or 11% growth to 8 or 9% growth, I suppose. And then you have a fundamental supply factor in the process, too. But you can tell me. The soybean crop in South America is off to a much better start than many had expected, because most had thought that the change in the weather forecast would not be good for the South American bean crop.
Well, and historically, the day before and the day after Thanksgiving is good for soybeans. And this year, we continue to see the Brazilians sell soybeans ahead. Maybe it's shrewd marketing on their part, but usually they have their marketing over with at this time of the year. And we really did think the Chinese would be in there. But the magic word is that we have a big carryout of soybeans of almost 195 million bushels, and of course, that's awful close to cheaper beans from the last report, and we're seeing it. The other factor is we are continuing to be flooded with feed grains in the world. Ukraine usually sells 5 million tons of corn in the export market. This year, they're selling 13 million tons. Cold weather will slow their exports down, but they're still selling about 3 million tons of feed grains per month into the world market, and that's just too much corn. And, historically, $6 has been a high price level for corn. So we are getting beat up, unfortunately, and for a while. Some of the fundamental people say that fair value in corn is $6 and we should see it. But the other factor is we don't have to bid up for corn, soybean, and wheat acres this spring. And as a result of that, the market's very, very dull, and people are basically taking a holiday as far as the bull side of the market.
Is it dull enough that producers can feel safe in stepping aside of the market and not paying too much of attention to it at this point?
Well, some of the best traders in the world always worry, including me, and you always should look over your shoulders and straight ahead all the time. I think this, unfortunately, is a little different type of market. It has surprised me to the extent of the bearishness so quick. Worry, I think it's always good to worry a little, Todd.
Are you worried enough that you would be a willing seller of old crop corn at this point?
Well, I'd be a willing seller of new crop corn. And, and the other marketing tool we like to do is, of course, write out of the money calls, and we've encouraged that a lot. But as far as taking decisive marketing action here on old crop corn at this tonight's price level, I would be avoid it, but at the same time, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we don't see just a little lower opening on Thursday night.
Okay, thanks so much, Paul, and
have a profitable day, Todd. Nice Thanksgiving.
You too. That's Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Just a couple of quick notes. On Friday, the markets are closed. It is a university holiday, so Dave and I are going to take the day off. I do have a program set up for you to listen to Friday afternoon, but you will not get fresh market numbers then, so find them from someplace else. I'm pretty sure that'll be easy to do. This afternoon, we will record our Commodity Week program. That'll happen at about 4:30. We'll post it tonight by about 6 o'clock to the website at willag.org. Our guest this week is Joe Vaklevic. He is from Straits Financial. Now, Dave Dickey should be here in just a moment. He'll take you through all the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, China's factory sector shrank the most in 32 months in November on signs of domestic economic weakness, reviving worries that China may be slipping toward a hard landing and fueling fears of a global recession. The steep fall in the Flash Purchasing Managers Index to 48 in November from 51 in October largely reflected domestic weakness as both output and new orders shrank, even as export orders continued to grow. The data suggested industrial output growth in China will moderate in coming months to an annual rate of 11-12%, a pace not seen since 2009 when China was pulling out of the global financial crisis. Meanwhile, business orders for long-lasting manufactured goods in the U.S. fell for a second straight month in October. Orders for durable goods fell 0.7% in October, following a September decline of 1.5%. Orders for core capital goods, considered a good proxy for business investment spending, dropped 1.8%, the biggest decline since a 4.8% fall in January. A judge on Tuesday said the trustee unwinding MF Global Holdings brokerage could move forward with an expedited handling of customer claims, a process the trustee hopes will result in quicker and more orderly payback for those owed money from the collapsed firm. Judge Martin Glenn has already approved the transfer of about 38,000 customer accounts to other firms, but only about 60% of the money is expected to be available at first. Meanwhile, CME Group moved to shake loose more customer cash and other collateral trapped within MF Global, increasing its financial guarantee on those funds to $550 million from a pledge earlier of $250 million. CME says it will grant MF Global's bankruptcy trustee latitude to make larger interim distributions of cash to customers now, given the monumental task he faces to sort through the considerable data and claims in order to complete the MF Global liquidation. Deere & Company says strong demand for its farm equipment helped boost the company's fourth quarter profit by 46%. Equipment sales were up 20% in the quarter. That helped Deere generate net income of $670 million, or $1.62 per share, for the 3 months ending October 31st. That's up from $457 million, or $1.01 per share a year earlier. Deere says equipment sales will increase about 15% next year, and profit will grow to $3.2 billion from this year's $2.8 billion. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Some holiday edition notes tomorrow on our affiliate stations. We will have a special Thanksgiving program on this station, our home station, WILL. No, we will not be here. Of course, the markets are open on Friday, but Dave and I are going to take the day off because it's a university holiday. So we won't have morning programming for our home station, but in the afternoon, I will be back with another special edition of the Closing Market Report. It will be a reworked, in part, Commodity Week, which we'll record this evening, by the way. Joe Vaklavic of Straits Financial is our guest this evening. We'll post that one to the website at willag.org. That's willag.org by about 6 o'clock tonight. And you can listen to it after that if you'd like, or hear a portion of it on Friday afternoon during the Closing Market Report, or on our Commodity Week program over the weekend on many of these radio stations. Now, up next, you know, the Weeds team here at the University of Illinois has been working for the better part of a decade to figure out how water hemp develops resistance to herbicides. As I'll report, a molecular scientist at Illinois has identified the genetic code that provides the resistance and learned that mostly it's a numbers game when the resistance is developed. The Department of Crop Sciences labs at the University of Illinois are heavily used to test water hemp tissue samples. The researchers are looking for the molecular markers that they found a few years ago that can tell them whether or not the weed is herbicide resistant. They have 500 samples from about 100 fields to go through. Most of them come from the northern part of Illinois. Farmers in the southern part of the state already know they have herbicide-resistant water hemp in their fields. The resistant populations have just slowly been moving northward, says molecular weed scientist Pat Tranel.
You know, water hemp, as we've talked about, it's dioecious, meaning male plants are either male or female. And so there's pollen movement. Every time you have fertilization of a plant, it's getting pollen from plants, you know, from wherever, you know, from various distances away. And so pollen is effectively spreading the resistance.
There are most certainly other ways resistant water hemp can move from one field to the other beyond open pollination. The seed are really tiny and get stuck in the crevices of equipment. More importantly, there are hundreds of thousands of seeds, and resistance development is a numbers game.
You're dealing with low probability events, and so the way to be successful with a low probability event is to throw a lot of numbers at it, right? Water hemp produces thousands and thousands of seed. A single female plant can produce, you know, a million seed. And so even if you have a one in a million event, well, one plant can produce a million seed to get you closer to having that one in a million probability. So I think it's largely a numbers game, and water produces lots of numbers. And then also the dioecious nature, where you have a lot of genetic diversity because you have pollen moving between plants, between fields. And that also does a great job of stacking resistance. So one farmer might be using a glyphosate program here and select for glyphosate resistance. His neighbor might be using diphenoether program, selecting for that resistance. Pollen moves between the fields, and now you get resistance to both of those in the same plant.
Water hemp plays the numbers game very well. There are some populations of the weed resistant to as many as five herbicide families. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the cash grain market from the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, is Scott Butcher. Good afternoon to you, Scott.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I hope you're looking forward to Thanksgiving like I am.
Yeah, it's fast approaching.
Very fast approaching. It won't be long.
That's right.
Tell me about the ethanol plant there and what it's been doing to prepare, if anything at all, for the end of the year and the end of the credits.
You know, I don't think, there's been a lot of change on our part. I mean, I think we've just continued to do things. You know, normally we're, continuing to try to buy corn as cheaply as we can, as efficiently as we can. So we really haven't changed anything in our game plan, still status quo.
And corn keeps getting cheaper, and the ethanol plant, of course, I assume, works less on basis like the elevator does than the elevator and works more on flat price. Is that right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay, so we've been getting cheaper corn. I suppose that's been helping out the margins or not?
Yeah, it is. I mean, for the most part, our, spot margins are pretty well already locked in anyway. So we don't have, there's not a lot of flex there as far as, the cheaper corn prices really probably aren't doing a lot for us now, but, will do, do something for us in the future if these prices continue to drop.
Tell me about cash basis for corn in your area, please.
Right now, we are 17 over the March here at Climbers.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
We've been competitive all along. We've seen a lot of movement here in the last, basically, I would say 2 weeks. The higher basis levels, I think, have kind of, I think guys have been, fairly diligent about moving corn, even with the board moving down the higher basis levels have kept them at least doing something. We've been in this area for a while. We just recently went from the December to the March.
Yeah, so that was my next question. I was thinking about that. I heard you say March, and that was that most of the jump in the basis then was December to March or not?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, and so your real basis hasn't changed all that much or not?
Yeah, it stayed pretty consistent. I think we were, we were mid-20s over the December, so with the spread difference, not a big change.
Okay, and then for soybeans in the area, what are processors doing?
Right now, the soybean processor is somewhere around option price. That's what it seems like, most of them are anyway. That, whether that's actually sourcing any soybeans or not, it doesn't really feel like it. It doesn't feel like there's much movement going on right now. I would be real surprised if option price to five over would buy beans right now.
How do you think it is that the value is coming out of corn and soybeans, despite the fact that you've got what appears to be an awful short supply and you're really in need of both crops?
Yeah, I think that, the biggest thing right now, just, the fundamentals kind of get thrown out the window this time of year. I mean, we go from, November to January. We really don't have any new news to trade off of until we get to January's report. So we go through the whole month of December without really much going on, and with all the negativity that we've got right now in the outside markets and economy stuff, it's going to continue to drop, it feels like.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
That's Scott Butcher. He's with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Back in a couple minutes for most of you.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
It's National Pfeffernuss Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1675, Charles II of England issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he revoked it on January 8th of 1676. In part, the proclamation declared, "Whereas it is most apparent that the multitude of coffee houses of late years set up and kept within this kingdom, and the great resort of idle and disaffected persons to them, have produced very evil and dangerous effects, His Majesty hath thought it fit and necessary that the said coffee houses be, for the future, put down and suppressed." In 1901, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert died, an English chemist. He is the co-inventor of superphosphate fertilizer. Superphosphate is a compound produced by treating rock phosphate with sulfuric acid, phosphorus acid, or a mixture of the two. In 1893, Sir John Bennett Laws opened the first fertilizer factory, thus initiating the artificial fertilizer industry. The following year, Gilbert joined him, and they began a collaboration lasting more than half a century. And in 1982, the Environmental Protection Agency announced it had found dangerous levels of dioxin in Times Beach, Missouri. Eventually, the EPA purchased the town for $32 billion, quarantined the site, and spent $110 million for cleanup. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is on board to take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather. Start here in the Midwest for me, please, and maybe we should take a look at Thanksgiving.
Well, yes. It looks like for those of you who will be traveling the rest of today, it's a fairly good time to do that. There's not much adversity out there. The leftovers of the previous storm are pushing further and further out of the eastern Midwest, so high pressure will be in control today and tomorrow, for that matter, and a warming trend underway. So it should be a fairly good couple of days. Now, coming back home might be a little different. We've got a cold front coming across a big part of the Midwest as we get into the heart of the weekend. Should generate widespread showers, a few thunderstorms across the region. It does not look like it's quite as wet as what was advertised earlier today. The latest model data suggesting a faster-moving storm system is giving us less persistence in the rain across the region. There will be snow in the upper Midwest, though, over the course of this weekend. So if you're traveling into the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, or a portion of Iowa, you should look for some snow on your return back home. After that, I think we'll see some drier and some cooler weather working its way across the Midwest as we move on into the work week next week. There will be a weak frontal system that will cut across the region, might produce a little bit of snow shower activity across the north, but otherwise it should be a relatively quiet week. And if you're concerned about hard red wheat country, there is one last frontal boundary that will cut across that region here tomorrow night into Friday, producing a little bit of shower activity in Oklahoma, north central Texas, maybe a few areas in the panhandle of Texas and eastern Kansas. But it'll be a very fast-moving system and one that is rather weak. And so we're not looking for any other precipitation other than that for the rest of the 10-day period coming up, so a little break in the precipitation out there as well.
Drew, is there much of a difference between an El Nino year and a La Nina year in the United States and in particular the Corn Belt?
For the winter season, absolutely. In the winter season of a La Nina event, there's a tendency for the heart of the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest to be very wet, from the northern delta to the Ohio River Basin. And just like we've seen, actually, in the past few weeks, that's very classic La Nina-type weather pattern. In an El Nino, it tends to go the other direction with less precipitation across those areas. Also, in an El Nino, we tend to get rain occurring more often across the southern parts of the country, including U.S. hard red wheat country, whereas in La Nina events, it tends to be a drier bias in the central and southern plains, the lower parts of the delta, and from Florida into portions of the eastern Carolinas. So you can almost just take whatever's happening right now and flip it around in the opposite realm, and that's pretty much what happens in an El Nino.
Then turn your attention to South America. Tell me about the crops there and how they're faring at the beginning of the season.
Certainly looks very good right now, unusually good. We are in this La Nina event, and there was supposed to be more trouble in Argentina and southern Brazil, but there isn't any. And the trend right now is very good for both countries, and Uruguay and Paraguay too, for that matter. Now, as we move forward over the next 10 days, I think we'll start seeing a little bit less precipitation in eastern Argentina, southernmost parts of Brazil, and neighboring areas of Uruguay and Paraguay. So these areas will start seeing a little bit of a firmer soil as we move into the second week of December. Not a crisis at this point, but we do have a lot of summer still ahead of us, so we're going to watch closely what happens in this part of South America. But for right now, everything's looking pretty rosy.
You have a great Thanksgiving, okay?
Thank you. You do the same.
All right. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated. You have a great Thanksgiving, too. I'm Todd Gleason.